2 years ago, Travis Von Brauner had stumbled into the best job of his life. Instead of a Jiffy Lube or a Hank's Auto Body, Travis landed a gig with an exclusive private firm, servicing a fleet of vehicles for some big-shot client who remained anonymous, at least to the mechanical crew. It was a pretty standard garage gig, except with very nice cars. Usually it was oil changes, tire rotation, stuff like that. Other times, it was bullet holes, body damage, and cleaning out some trace evidence indicating a whole other kind of body damage. Do the work, don't ask questions, and everyone is happy. Of course, Travis had always been one of those give-an-inch, take-a-country-mile kind of guys. Pretty soon, the best job ever wasn't good enough. Their contract could expire at any time. Travis wasn't allowed to know anything about the client, which gave him zero job security. He also didn't see a way to advance in the organization, and this chafed him. Travis popped off at the mouth, starting maybe asking too many questions. Still, it was all pretty minor stuff, and things might have gone on indefinitely for Travis. Until he got a special performance evaluation. It wasn't just Travis. Everyone on the crew had the same private one-on-one meeting with an outside evaluator who worked for that anonymous client. Much to Travis's surprise, this outside evaluator was a teenage girl. He responded poorly to this. To his further surprise, the next morning, Travis was denied access to the garage, given a month's pay for severance, and told to never come back. Travis, he didn't take this too well. He would have raged against the machine, but which machine? He had never gotten any real information, so he didn't know who to be angry with. Except, of course, for the girl. This was her fault, ultimately. Some months had passed since his termination. Travis found another job in another garage, which paid a lot less and worked him a lot harder. On his way into work Friday morning, he stopped by the local Cuban joint for a breakfast sandwich. He was in the to-go line, not in the dining area. But from across the room, he heard a familiar voice. He scanned the dining room, and there she was, sitting in the corner with a group of other women, having breakfast and coffee while they chatted. Travis stared at this girl. He didn't even know her name, but he knew exactly who she was. His blood pressure spiked. He clenched his fists. The girl noticed him staring. She squinted her eyes as if she was studying his face. And then she went back to talking with her gal pals. She had ruined his entire life, and she didn't even remember him. Travis tapped his fists together and scowled at her. That bitch was going to pay.
Drinking whiskey in the kitchen and tell the scary stories around the fire. Music, monsters and mayhem. Killers, cannibals and cults. Fearful fiction and furious fact. Tall tales and terrifying truths. This is A Scary Home Companion.
The coffee klatch had become an institution. a small but elite group of friends who met once a week for food, coffee, and small talk about anything un-work-related. It was spearheaded and managed by Jessica Meanwhile, who insisted on its importance for morale. Piranha Solution be darned. Victoria Bondurant be darned too. Jessica was right, it was important for morale. That didn't mean it wasn't both reckless and dangerous. Security measures were always taken. They never met in the same place twice, and most of them came separately with their own armed escort. The armed escorts waited in the parking lot. They watched the comings and goings. All of them except for Epiphany Dubois. She was Jessica's personal bodyguard and best friend, as well as a cornerstone of the coffee clatch. Cordelia May was also a regular attendee, as well as being halfway in charge of all Ambrose security. She answered directly to Sadie Jane, who only attended the clatch sporadically. On this particular meeting, in this particular random diner in North Miami Beach, Sadie was, as usual, unable to attend. She was doing one of her hush-hush powwows with Lefty. Enid Marbury was also not present, and hadn't been in several weeks now. Ever since that business with the breach in the cruise ship, Enid had been out to sea. It was starting to worry Jessica a wee bit. It was a Friday morning, and Jessica sat in a corner booth with Epiphany and Cordelia. Mona Skellington parked her high-tech wheelchair against the open edge of the table. Jessica had never tried Cuban coffee before, and was now being quite motor-mouthed from the mega-blast of caffeine. She was in the midst of rambling about the new Nancy Drew TV show when she noticed the creepy guy checking her out. You probably all know this already, but if I haven't mentioned it before, Nancy Drew is one of my idols. One of the reasons I wanted to become a detective and solve mysteries. So I was, you know, really excited about this new show. An updated Nancy for our generation, right? I'm still on the fence about it. I don't know that I like the supernatural aspects. Classic Nancy never had that, did she? No, I don't think so. Except maybe later on in that R.L. Stine craze, I don't know who can keep up with so many books. And the girl that plays Nancy is... I don't know, but... And that's when she saw him. Standing in line, gawking at her. Did he look familiar? Maybe? A little? Epiphany cut in. I think you're being too hard on the show because of your deep personal connection to the source material. You grew up on those books. Reading a book is like watching a movie in your head. It's hard for any TV show to compete with that. You know what I'm saying? That's a good point, Piff. Also, does anyone else think this coffee is laced with something? I'm like, you know, up here. She held her hand over her head, palm sideways, to show where she was, you know, like. Mona said, you know what show I sort of love to hate watch now? Lost. I know it's old and it's corny, but all that shit with the evil island? Feels sorta on the nose, doesn't it? Like maybe the creator has got the idea from a dream they had. Epiphany said, I feel ya. I'm a Twin Peaks girly. Caught my attention a long time ago, probably because of that whole dreamy, nightmare-y thing David Lynch does so well. Hits a little close to home. Cordy didn't watch much TV or many movies. She found them too immersive, and she preferred to stay immersed in her actual surroundings. Situational awareness, she called it. She did enjoy listening to music once in a while, but that was about it. You're always on the job, aren't you, Cordelia? Jess rolled her eyes. You have to admit you're glad I made you watch Fox and the Hound, though, right? Cordy conceded that she was. "Cordelia, check your phone," Mona interjected, giving her android a puzzled look. "Is yours out too?" Everyone got quiet. These phones didn't lose service. Ever. If and when that did happen, it was cause for alarm. On cue, the front doors opened, and the armed escorts entered the diner, taking seats near the door and watching their charges closely. "This is the third time this week it's happened. It's never for longer than... Okay, here, we're back." Mona looked visibly relieved when connectivity was restored. "Still, this is fucked. Sorry, Jessica, but it's fucked. Yesterday it hit the office building, too. I need to get back. I know it's an attack of some kind, but I can't figure it out. Where it came from or what it is. Cordy, are you coming with me?" Mona motored out the front doors, while Cordelia left enough money on the table to settle the bill and leave a generous tip. "Sorry to cut it short, girls. We'll do it again next week." Cordy hugged Jessica, then Epiphany, before checking her phone again. "Ah, shit, it's Sadie. I have to take this. Jess, one of the boys, will give you a ride back to your place." "Are you kidding?" Jess harrumphed. "It's like 6 blocks from here. I'd like to walk. Piff, can we walk? I have so much energy right now. But if your knee hurts, if you can't handle it, that's okay." "Nah, Jess. A walk sounds good." "I'd be more comfortable if you had an escort," Cordelia insisted. "Not just out of friendship, but out of professionalism. You can have your guy walk with us, okay? Or follow us in the car if he needs to. Whatever makes you comfortable, Cordy." The security guy indeed walked them home, providing a subtle yet armed escort as he trailed 50 feet behind them. They walked back to the condo, taking their time and enjoying the day before it got too muggy out. The escort kept his eyes locked on his charges every step and demonstrated very little of the situational awareness that Cordelia prided herself on. For example, he didn't notice the man following him, a man whose eyes were also locked on Jessica every step of the way. This was how Travis von Brauner found out where his arch enemy lived. The girl and her big, chubby buddy, who looked like a lesbian, lived in a swank 2-bedroom condo. And Travis lived in a 1-room loft, renting it weekly from the boarding house because that's all he could currently afford. The fact that this rich bitch was living so high on the hog served to further irritate and anger him. By this point, Travis was on a dark emotional path, caught up in his wild thoughts, fueled by resentment and underscored by his own personal failure in life. Travis was a big talk radio fan, so he had the rhetoric and the vernacular to twist this young girl into a symbol of everything that was wrong with the world and his life. Later that night, he borrowed a car from work, off the books, and did a few drive-bys past her house. They had a nice alarm system, but there was also an unmarked security firm that dropped by on a regular basis, probably like the guy who was walking behind them earlier. It wasn't full-time security, but the place was actively watched. The next night, he went back in a different car. He didn't know how closely the local vehicles were being examined by that security team. Travis had no way of knowing it, but the security team drop-ins were not as frequent as they usually were. Due to these ongoing tech issues, a few recent events tied to the Piranha Solution, and the latest round of firings, personnel was stretched very thin. Sadie had pleaded with Jessica to come to the Ambrose compound and stay for a few weeks. Victoria Bondurant was in the midst of using her inside knowledge of the organization against it with what she called the Piranha Solution. Instead of attempting a kill shot, she wanted to devour them bit by bit. Jessica argued that being so close to Lila Ambrose and in the heart of her operation was the single most dangerous place that she could be. Besides, Epiphany was her full-time bodyguard, and there were usually other security people around. But the core of it was she just didn't like staying at Lila's place. She loved the apartment that she and Epiphany had picked out together. After bouncing around for a while, Jessica finally had a real home. Just to be safe, the place had a panic room behind Jessica's bedroom closet, big enough for her and a friend. After the first round of outages, Cordy had brought a specialist over to check out Jessica's house. The main security system had gone offline for 7 minutes, but since the panic room wasn't connected, it wasn't affected. There was a sat phone inside it to use to call for help, God forbid, in case of an emergency, but the panic room itself was immune from the system issues, which may or may not have been related to hacking. Mona had the entire system locked down tighter than dick skin, and she was used to fending off attacks from very skilled black hat programmers. This seemed like it was a genuine malfunction coming from somewhere deep inside the system, but she couldn't isolate it. And that meant she couldn't absolutely rule out that the problems were coming from an outside source. In times like these, she had to assume the worst and hope for the best. Almost all operations had been curtailed while Mona settled the security issues. They were exposed, so all resources were being focused on self-protection. For her part, Jessica was glad to have some time off. No performance evaluations, no travel, no harem scarum. Instead, she got to hang out. She and Piff went to the beach one day, and the movies 2 days in a row. They went to the mall, spent lots of money, and then, that evening, they put on a fashion show for each other. When the security guy came by for a check-in, Jessica pulled him inside and made him watch the end of the show. It wasn't going to take long for Mona to sort everything out. In the meantime, Jessica treated this like a long overdue summer vacation. As I mentioned, Travis von Brauner knew none of this. Even if he didn't have blinders on, he probably never could have seen it. It was a late afternoon on a muggy, rainy Tuesday, just a few days after he had first seen Jessica at that diner. Travis had Tuesdays off from work to attend his court-mandated therapy and his anger management class. Tuesday always put Travis in a bad mood. He had to spend his only goddamn day off lying to shrinks and trying to keep the bass out of his voice, sitting in a circle telling secrets and talking about feelings. Fuck out of here with that shit. And it was absolutely bullshit that he had to be there in the first place. That little tease came out to his truck with them behind the bar. What did she think was going to happen? Her panties never came off, so the lawyer was able to talk it down from sexual assault to simple assault. And these classes were part of the sentence. It was always the same. Like the girl in high school or the girl in college. Playing hard to get is one thing, but there are limits. There are fucking limits. No means no, my ass. So yeah, Tuesdays got Travis pretty fucking revved up. He wasn't thinking clearly, which is why he drove his own truck past Jessica's condo. A long, slow gander revealed something he couldn't fucking believe. He parked half a block away and hustled back. Hot damn. His eyes had not deceived him. After a long, shitty day and a long, shitty life, it seemed he'd finally caught a break. The alarm system was blank, and the front door was standing open just the tiniest bit. He used his boot to push it open, and he stepped inside. They were at the movies. Again. They were seeing Knives Out. Again. And Jessica was seriously debating dropping Sherlock Holmes from her big three and replacing him with Benoit Blanc. Benoit was a more human version of Sherlock, with a lot more heart. Sherlock, sort of a dick. And did she really want to have a person like that on her list of influences? It was still light out when the movie ended, so Epiphany drove them to an ice cream shop before heading back home. Right when Jessica entered the alarm code and unlocked the front door, Epiphany's phone rang. It was Cordelia. Hey, girl. No, we're good. We went to the movies. Well, the door was locked. Alarm was active. Were there more problems? Okay. Yeah, I have the burner with me, and we have the landline. Anything looks weird or feels weird, I'll call you. We saw Knives Out again. Yeah. Nah, I'd watch Daniel Craig again and again and again. Okay, bye. Jessica went to her room to change. She put on a big double X t-shirt that Manny had given her. She wore it like a nightgown. She sat down in the living room and played some Sims while Epiphany took a shower and changed into stretchy pants and house shoes. Piff left a handgun on the coffee table, right next to the game system. She sat down with a dual groan into the easy chair next to the sofa. Epiphany groaned, and so did the easy chair. Cordy gave me a couple of extra guns, she said. You should keep one in your room. We all think it's a good idea. You're a damn good shot at this point. Well, I had the best teachers, Jess said, somewhat absently, being focused on her game. But I don't want one in my room when I go to sleep. I read this story about someone who kept a gun in their nightstand, and in the middle of the night, they got an asthma attack, right? So, in the darkness, they reached into the nightstand, and they grabbed the gun instead of the inhaler, and they blew their own head off. Okay. First of all, that never happened anywhere to anyone. Second, you don't have asthma. I still think it's a good point, Jessica mumbled, glassy eyes reflecting the perfect virtual world she was building. Okay, leave the gun on the table so I know where it is if I need it. Is that good enough? They sat for a while. Piffany playing on her phone, Jessica on the TV. It was nice. Just 12 feet away from them, it was not so nice. Travis von Brauner was in the panic room, and he was sweating his ass off. He had to strip off his shirt just to use it to mop himself down once or twice. He was just waiting for the big un to go to bed. He was waiting for the girl to go to sleep. He had let himself in a couple of hours earlier, found the place empty. Then he saw the alarm was rearming and that he had 10 seconds to make a choice. Possibly, he could have made it to the front door. But he was in the bedroom closet at the time, so he opted to hide in the panic room. In there, Travis had a lot of time to think. Despite his past with women, he did not see himself as a rapist or an abuser, which meant his intent, as sinister as it might be, was not to sexually assault this girl. Although she did look old enough to be legal, this wasn't about that. It wasn't about that at all. He just wanted to scare her a little bit. Show up in her room, wake her up, maybe slap her around a little, throw the fear of fucking God into that little bitch. He just needed her to feel as shitty as he did, to understand that her actions had consequences. The longer he stayed in that tiny, cramped room, the more Travis stewed, the higher his blood pressure went, the deeper his scowl became. He could hear them chattering away in the other room, their goddamn mini mansion, watching a plasma screen TV he could never afford. Then the voices stopped. The bedroom door opened and closed. He heard distant bathroom sounds, brushing, spitting, flushing, some music playing on a bedside speaker. The girl talked to herself a little, but he couldn't make out what she was saying. Then it was quiet. He let it stay quiet for a while before he gently opened the door and stepped into the closet. The AC washed over him gloriously. He felt so delightful that for a few moments he actually forgot how fucking pissed off he was. Travis opened the door and entered the bedroom. Skin with a sweaty, slick sheen. He watched her sleep, rubbing his hands together, deciding exactly how he was going to handle this. Her phone chirped from the bedside table, an alert about losing service. Jessica shifted in her bed but did not wake. He leaned in close to her. Her breath smelled like peppermint. And then there was movement in the front room. A scuffle. And Jessica's friend called out for her to run. Jessica woke up with a start and saw Travis just a few inches away from her face. She started to scream. So he put one hand over her mouth and the other around her skinny little neck. In her bedroom, Epiphany had received the same notification as Jessica. Unlike Jessica, she didn't ignore it. She popped right out of bed and grabbed a gun. The security screen next to her bedroom door read "disarmed." Then it blinked and said, unlocked. Not bothering with her house shoes, Piff went to check the front door and found it standing wide open. A woman she recognized was on the front step, her arms folded behind the small of her back. "Hello, Epiphany," said Victoria Bondurant. Epiphany didn't think. She just raised the gun to shoot. She didn't see the shadows moving behind her, coming from the hiding places against the wall. One of them grabbed her hand, pushing it down, wrenching the gun away from it. The other shadow dropped a leather strap around Epiphany's throat and started to choke her out. With her last wheezing breath, she shouted for Jessica to run. Epiphany struggled. She threw herself back into her attacker, using her weight to her advantage. They crashed through the coffee table, and she reached out for the other gun. Victoria stood by, watching with a Cheshire grin as four of her people beat Epiphany with fists and feet until she slowly lost consciousness. "Okay, enough," she said, and waved them off. Victoria opened the door to Jessica's bedroom, fully feeling her moment of triumph. The games they'd been playing with the security systems, cutting them out here and there, making them seem, over time, inconsequential, like a glitch, making them feel normal, just to buy her a few extra minutes when it mattered, right now. To do this thing at the behest of the priest with red hands. Victoria was startled to see another person in the room. Travis was holding Jessica in front of him like a shield, hand over her mouth, the crook of his elbow perilously close to her throat. "Who the fuck are you?" he said. Victoria recognized him. Not in person, but from the files. Now, she had full access to the filing cabinets of data stored in her gray matter, so it didn't take but a moment to put a name to the face. Travis Van Brauner. Von Brauner. "You were a mechanic. You worked for us. We fired you. And it was this bitch's fault. And I wasn't going to, you know, I just needed her to understand." "Understand what, Travis?" "It wasn't her fault. Yes, she did recommend that we fire you, but we were already watching you. You're unstable. You're not the sort of person anyone can rely on. You're fueled by your emotions, aren't you?" "Yeah, but no, I mean, Travis, you might be a good mechanic, but you're just not as useful as you think you are." "Okay, go ahead." Victoria stepped aside so that one of her people could aim Epiphany's gun and shoot Travis in the forehead. He fell back on the bed, and Jessica stood, trembling, knees knocking just below the hem of that t-shirt. She rubbed the sides of her neck, trying to get the stink of his sweat off her. "I'm not going to hurt you, Jessica," Victoria said gently. "Yes, you will. You hate me. You've always hated me." "I did. Once upon a time, that's true. But everything's different now. I don't hate you. I promise. I'm going to protect you." She stepped in close. Her green eyes glittered. "You're going to come with me. I promise you, if I wanted you dead, or something worse, I would have done it right here on Lyle's doorstep. Come with me. She pushed Jessica out of the bedroom, where she saw Epiphany still laying on the floor, sitting halfway up with a knee braced between her shoulder blades and that leather strap cinched around her neck. Just enough slack to let her draw breath and stay conscious so she could see her friend. Victoria said, "Come peacefully with us, and I will let your friend live. Refuse, and we'll fucking mutilate her. And then we'll take you anyway. So, I guess it's not much of a choice now, is it?" Jessica shook her head. "Okay," she whispered. Victoria made a hand motion, and Epiphany was released. She had not the strength to stand, nonetheless fight. She tried. She struggled to sit up. But Jessica stared her in the eye and silently pleaded for her to stay still. The lackeys left the room. Jessica said goodbye to Epiphany and told her she loved her. Piff didn't have the voice to respond, but she wheezed back in return. Victoria took Jessica by the hand, peacefully, and led her to a waiting car. As they drove away, she stroked Jessica's hair. "You have no idea how important you are, do you?" Thank you for listening to another episode of A Scary Home Companion. Come back soon to find out what happens to dear Jessica. You can find the show on social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can contact us directly at ascaryhomecompanion@gmail.com. Or you can support the show through our Patreon page, where you get dozens of bonus episodes never released to the public. You also get a free autographed copy of the new book, Bedtime Stories for Weird Kids. 21 spooky, odd, and downright strange tales culled from the history of this show. Stories designed to be read aloud. You can buy it through Amazon, or sign up for the Patreon, and I'll mail you one. While you're reading the book, I also need to recommend a new album available streaming on Spotify by Pathos Productions called How to Get to Hell. This is original music used in the show by my friend and collaborator John Ojeda, How to Get to Hell on Spotify. The episode was edited and produced by Jeff Davidson. It featured the music Night Hunt by Exorciste de Style, Follow Me by Noel Griffin, Inside by A Ninja Slob, Elemental Prism by Robedor, and Chelsea Oxendine with the theme music.